Rory McIlroy triumphant in Dubai once again. A thrilling finish at the Hero Dubai Desert Classic. Had a familiar ending. The Northern Irishman kicking off his year with a bang as he wins for the 17th time on the DP World Tour. But believe it or not, Rory's win overshadowed by an amateur who made history at the American Express. Alabama sophomore Nick Dunlap took down some of the best players in the world to become the first amateur to win on tour since 1991. We'll break it down, both wins, over the next 2 hours right here on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
It's Monday. It's Golf Today. Damon Hatt alongside Rex Hoggard, senior writer at Golf Channel. Buddy, we've been around for a long time. We've seen some great, precocious young players come down the pike. What we saw yesterday, extremely rare and extremely special.
What football? That's what I kept thinking last night on Sunday night. I'm like most Americans. I looked at my TV. I had both screens going because you want to watch the football and you want to watch the golf. Eventually, I got distracted, had to turn the football off because history was being made. We're going to get into this a little bit later in the show, but I'm blown away by the idea that not just Nick, but all of the young players. We've talked about this with Gordon Sargent. We've talked about this with Ludwig Aubert. They show up fully formed. They show up with all the tools they need to win. It's just a matter of if they can be mentally strong. He proved he was mentally strong.
And amazing to do it in front of your parents, Jim and Charlene. You got the Alabama erstwhile football coach Nick Saban called into the broadcast. Jay Sewell had the milkshake out there, the Alabama golf coach. He had his girlfriend out there, did Nick. I mean, it was just special. It was almost like it was a script flown in from Hollywood.
When you looked at the final round, and you and I talked about this morning, I was curious because I have a son. I have two sons that are about that age, and I was really curious, man, how would they react in that situation? He never looked nervous.
Yeah.
Had a chance to talk with his sports psychologist. We're going to touch base with him later. Just about the idea that he comes out with a killer mentality. Mm. You cannot teach that. Not to a 20-year-old, probably not to a 30-year-old. I think this is something that we're going to see more and more from the younger players because they know how talented they are. It's just a matter if they can show up and do the things that need to be done. You talked about the Nick Saban interview.
Yeah.
It felt like a TED Talk. I either wanted to go play football or play golf. One of the two things.
Only amateur in the field. He knocked them all down yesterday. In case you missed it, the putt that made PGA Tour history last night, about 5'9" for par for the Alabama sophomore Nick Dunlap, became the second youngest winner on tour since World War II, playing alongside a couple of Ryder Cup veterans and Sam Burns, fellow Bama alum Justin Thomas. What a huge moment it was for the 20-year-old and his family as well. And with the win, history. Dunlap recorded just the 9th win by an amateur on tour since 1940 and only the 3rd since 1980. An incredible list to join, as you see here, and one that clearly isn't added to very often. Here's Nick Dunlap after his emotional victory.
What did you dream of as a young kid in terms of what your golf life would look like as an adult?
I mean, that, literally, a chance to win a PGA Tour event. That's, you know, as a kid, you kind of whack it around all over the putting green, and every putt's for a chance to win, whether that's a PGA Tour event, the Masters, the U.S. Open. And to have that putt, you know, I took a little bit longer than I normally might, and just taking the moment you know, nothing's for granted. I may not ever have that chance again, and I just want to embrace it you know, like I said, it may not ever happen again.
Have you made a decision on, you have PGA Tour membership if you want it now, or is that something you need to take more time to think about?
Oh, boy. I did. I have no idea. I really don't. It's really cool to have that opportunity in the first place. And you know, starting the week, if you would have said, hey, in 5 days, you're going to have a PGA Tour card or an opportunity for 2 years, I'd have looked at you sideways. But no, that's a, you know, something that it doesn't just affect me. It affects a lot of people and, you know, and coach back there and my teammates. And, it's a conversation I need to have with a lot of people before I make that decision.
You're of the right age where maybe you would have watched a lot of YouTube videos of swings as a kid. I'm wondering if you did and who you gravitated to.
I think you'd be dumb not to say Tiger, right? I think I have maybe a little bit of a Dustin Johnson move through the ball. But no, I think everybody wanted to swing it like Tiger. I mean, he's won however many times, however many majors, and, you know, if not the most success, he's, you know, one or two. But no, I always wanted to swing it like Tiger. I just couldn't, and every time I tried, I would probably mess it up.
And how about your incredibly mature bearing for someone who's 20 years old? Where do you think that comes from?
I think, honestly, playing with people older than me and playing with professionals and seeing how they carry themselves. You know, I was a little brat when I was younger, and they kind of punked me into shape, and, you know, I still have my moments, but I think they did a really good job of pointing me in the right direction and, to where I am today.
And after round two, you were discussing that you were in the back of the Sprinter van with your Alabama team. As a PGA Tour winner, does that move your spot in the van at all?
Maybe a seat forward. Now, normally it goes based off of, you know, youngest to oldest, and, you know, I'm normally back in the back, and Seawall hit a speed bump and your head will hit the top of the ceiling, and then hopefully we'll see.
Moving from the back seat, he's driving the team van now. You know, he has all the love and support from his teammates at Bama. This is a video post by one of his Bama mates, Cannon Clakem, as Nick Dunlap knocked in the winning putt. You can just see the excitement. You can hear the excitement, to be sure. Many chants of Roll Tide on that party van. And how about some congratulations from the last amateur to win on tour back in 1991? Congratulations from the World Golf Hall of Famer, Phil Mickelson, saying such an impressive performance by Nick Dunlap. Congratulations on an incredible win. This is just the beginning. Another former decorated amateur, John Rahm, also went on social media yesterday. What an amazing accomplishment. Stellar play, way to pull through under pressure to join a very select group of players to win PGA Tour events as an amateur. Great future. Both Phil and Rahm, of course, members of the Live Golf Series.
Now, things get complicated now as we look ahead to what could possibly come next. You heard his voice when he was asked about it in the press conference. Oh boy, like, what comes next? Does he turn pro? Does he stay an amateur? But here's what Nick Dunlap's victory as an amateur means. He didn't earn any prize money or FedEx Cup points, but he does earn a PGA Tour card through the 2026 season if and when he turns pro. He could claim that card at any point in 2024. If he waits, he could also claim the card for 2025 after the season is finished. Now, looking ahead, he's already qualified for the Masters via his victory at the U.S. Amateur last year. With a win yesterday, and if he turns pro, he could still be in the Masters as a tournament winner, different category, and he could still participate in full field events out of the tournament winners category. He would be limited to about a dozen starts if that's the case, and he would not be in the signature event. So now, fast forward, if he makes the decision, if he does turn pro, he would earn a spot in the 2024 PGA Championship at Valhalla, and he would also gain entry into the players and all signature events on the PGA Tour. That would not be the case if he remained an amateur. So, as we pointed out, tough choice ahead for Nick.
Some big decisions ahead for the 20-year-old. It's time now for the Golf Today Roundtable, joined by two guys who know the game inside and out, Todd Lewis and Ryan Lavner. Lav, I want to come to you first. You know, maybe for some viewers, they're learning about Nick for the first time. How much buzz has there been about this player over the last few years in the game?
Well, there's been a ton, Damon, and obviously you saw what he did last summer, becoming the only player besides Tiger Woods to win a U.S. Junior, which he did in 2021, and then the U.S. Amateur, which he did last summer. So he obviously has incredible championship pedigree. His parents told the story of him shooting 59 as a 12-year-old. He's kind of been groomed for this, but he's also, I would argue, been kind of overshadowed in even his own class. If you look at the college rankings right now, he's always up there with Michael Thorbjornsson, with Gordon Sargent, with Caleb Surratt, with Ben James of Virginia, who won five times as a freshman. And so I think it's really an indication of where we are in college golf, where there really has never been this tight of a gap between elite college golf and the best circuit in the world. It's obviously a very exciting time if you're between the ages of 18 and 22.
Now, Todd, no one covers the PGA Tour better than you. You've seen these young players come out on tour and have immediate success. Was there anything in Nick's game or demeanor yesterday that stood out to you?
Yeah, his mentality. I mean, he has the mechanics. He has the speed. He's a great putter. But when he rinsed that ball on the seventh tee, I mean, it didn't just trickle in the lake. It was just about lateral. It went right in the middle of the penalty area. And I said, the pressure's too much for this young 20-year-old. But he recalibrated himself, probably became a little angry, maybe subconsciously or even consciously gave himself some freedom, and was able to fight back and ultimately grab the lead and make that par on the 18th hole. He showed me a lot of grit. And talking to people that have been around him, that grit and determination is a major weapon, maybe the biggest weapon that he has in his bag. So, yes, he's just 20 years of age, but he already is showing me and the world that he definitely has the emotional capability and the mental capability to play at the highest level.
Lav, Rex just read off the list of possibilities for Nick if he turns pro, if he decides to remain amateur. Do you have a sense of what that decision is going to be going forward? Because obviously he has the game to not just compete on the PGA Tour, but win on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, I certainly think he's going to be pulled hard in one direction, and that's turning pro. He's in the field this week at Torrey Pines. So if he is going to play the Farmers Insurance Open as a pro, he does need to make that decision somewhat imminently. And a lot of people say, you know, he'd be an idiot for not turning pro right now. You're looking at $10, $20 million guaranteed. He gets at all the signature events. Like, he can set himself up for his future very quickly and very easily. I'm of the belief, though, Damon, this actually may be unpopular. I think he could actually do well by going back to school for the next 4 months. If you think about it, there was no way on Wednesday night, ahead of the American Express, that he thought that he was about to be a PGA Tour member by Sunday night. And so if you want to actually put pause on this whole thing, he's still going to be in some of the major championships. He still has PGA Tour status wrapped up through 2026 whenever he decides he does want to. But there's so much that you have to figure out as a professional that can't be done in 24 or 48 hours. It may actually behoove him to go back to school for a couple of months to be a really famous student athlete in a really fun college town in Tuscaloosa, tick off some of the other accomplishments that he wants, like becoming the number one ranked amateur or winning an NCAA title with his Crimson Tide teammates, and then kind of take on the world with everything squared away in early June. I don't anticipate that he will do that, but I think it actually could be a tougher decision than maybe we think it is.
Okay, this will be fun. Todd, I need to hear your side of this other flip coin right now, because Lav is saying he thinks he should at least stay in school for the next few months, maybe try to compete for an NCAA championship. What say you?
Well, first off, it's his decision, and I wish him the best. Yeah, I don't think he can make a wrong decision here, given what it's in front of him. But when you come out on the PGA Tour, you guys know this, there are a lot of things you have to adjust to. The travel, you don't have a team to support you like he does at the University of Alabama. You have to adjust to that, being on an island in so many words. You have to learn these new golf courses. You have to understand what it's like to be now in the presence of media a lot, especially given what he just accomplished. However, if he turns professional right now, he not only has his PGA Tour card for the rest of 24, but also through 25 and 26. He's not at the University of Alabama, from what I understand, to learn how to sell Volkswagens. He is there to become a professional golfer. And because of that, you are in all the signature events. You're going to be playing at the highest level if you turn professional immediately, beginning with Pebble Beach. And by doing so, you can gain all that great exposure and experience in what it takes to be an elite PGA Tour player. And if he plays well, he could have the opportunity to be in the signature events for 2025. So I hope he makes the right decision, but I think the wisest decision, if he wants to be a PGA Tour player, is turn professional immediately, go to Pebble Beach and start your signature tournament run right there and see where it takes you.
Todd, speaking of being on an island, you started the year in Hawaii. These first three stories that we've seen, Chris Kirk, Grayson Murray, and now Nick Dunlap, as a reporter, as a storyteller, how much of a palate cleanser has the first few weeks of this PGA Tour season been?
I tell you, all four of us have been kind of, I like to say it, we're in the journalistic breakdown linebacker position, waiting for the fullback to hit us at all times, given what's been happening with the world of golf and the PGA Tour and PIF and so on. To have these stories of players and Chris Kirk and Grayson Murray, who've had to overcome some internal demons of depression and alcoholism, fight through those barriers, and their continued work in progress to inspire many others, regardless of your profession, that you can achieve. That's tremendous there. Now you've got a 20-year-old who can't buy a car. He can't celebrate with champagne in a bar after his win last. He can't rent a car, I should say. He can't have a drink to celebrate. And he goes on and wins and makes history. I mean, you're right. I mean, this really did shake the snow globe that was kind of dirty in regards to golf and say, wow, there's some wholesome, wonderful stories out there on the world stage.
And Thilo, this may be like the 47th most important thing about Nick Dunlap's victory, but this, I think, was also a reminder of the significance of having these full field events on the PGA Tour. Nick Dunlap would not have played in this event if it was just 48-man, no cut, limited field, guaranteed money. Like, that wasn't going to be Nick Dunlap's avenue to becoming a star on the PGA Tour. The beauty of competitive golf is the openness, and that if you get a tee time and you're playing against the world's best for 4 days, 72 holes, you can still prevail and you can make a name for yourself. I think that was kind of a subtle reminder of what transpired in the desert, that following the LIV model of the same 48 players over and over again is really not going to be all that appealing to golf fans.
Wow, Lav and Thilo are one of the biggest stories we've seen in the last few years in the game of golf. They were so good. We're going to invite them back in just a little bit to talk about Rory McIlroy. Still to come on Golf Today, Chase Johnson has been chasing his PGA Tour dreams over the last few years. And just last week found out he'll be playing in his first signature event next month. Who broke the news? None other than Tiger Woods. We'll talk to Chase himself after the break. Rex, we know the field at RIV will be an elite one, and this year the field will include Chase Johnson, announced last week as the 2024 Charlie Sifford Memorial Exemption recipient, awarded annually since 2009. The Sifford Exemption represents the advancement of diversity in the game of golf, and Chase Johnson has been building quite the resume, the 16th recipient of the Sifford Memorial Exemption. He's played in four previous PGA Tour events, made a couple of cuts, finished top five in all 11 starts during the 2023 PGA Tour season. Three wins, was a three-time all-conference player while at Kent State University. Great to have Chase with us on this Monday. Congratulations. So word on the street is that the Sifford Memorial Exemption is kind of given the news by Tiger Woods himself. Was that a phone call, text message? Was it a carrier pigeon? How'd you find out the news?
It was really cool. I got the call from Mr. Antolini, and then I saw the comment from Tiger when he announced it about how he let the clubs do the talking for me last year. And, you know, going back to when I was a kid, there was a movie called The Tiger Woods Story. And, you know, that was one of the things that he always said was, I let my clubs do the talking for me. So it was really cool to kind of have that moment from my childhood and seeing him in the movie be brought to real life in the announcement. So that was really cool.
Chase, you've had the opportunity to play in a handful of PGA Tour events. You've had some success. You made the cut in Detroit. I'm curious what you're going to take from those events into Riviera.
Yeah, each step is a building block, and I'm starting to get comfortable. I played well in, you know, all the events that I played in, and the cuts that I did miss weren't by much. And then my ball striking was really good. It's come a long way. My overall game, short game and everything, I put a lot of work into it. So if we could just get a couple more putts to fall on the weekend. Unfortunately, these guys are too good out here, and one under par doesn't do too much for you on the weekend. So just take it one shot at a time and see how many putts we can get to fall.
You're chasing the dream. You want to play in the show, as we call it, the PGA Tour. I understand you were on a plane following Nick Dunlap's exploits yesterday. How much of the golf did you get to see, and were you inspired by it at all?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's always good to see good golf being played by anybody, but it was really cool. I was rooting for him because I remember when I first learned about how Phil was the first one, or, you know, not the first one, but the last amateur to win in 91. And so on the plane, I was watching it and I got to hole about 14 and the plane landed cut off right when he was getting ready to hit the putt. It was right after he hit the pin. It was either 14 or 15 and my phone was dead. So I couldn't even look at the leaderboard. And it was about an hour later when I got into the rental car, was able to charge the phone. And I called my fiance and I was like, hey, what happened? She's like, yeah, he did it. So that was, you know, a huge moment for the game of golf. And I'm really happy for him. Hopefully he can, you know, keep playing well. Obviously, he's been trending in the right direction for a while.
Now, Riviera is such a special place in the game of golf. I'm curious, what are your expectations the week of the Genesis Invitational? And what are you looking forward to the most?
I mean, looking forward to getting to spend a little bit more time with Tiger. You know, I got to meet him in Cabo when I played in the Worldwide Technology event, and you know, I managed to say my name correctly, so that was always a good step in the right direction. So looking forward to meeting him, but overall just looking to be able to test my game against the best players in the world on such a historic course. I mean, this place is gorgeous, and I know the work that I put in is, you know, proving itself. So now this will be a great test to see where I stand, and you know, hopefully we can take advantage of it.
Chase, speaking of famous people, I understand you're a huge Harry Potter fan. How'd you get so into the most famous love from House Gryffindor?
I don't know. It was as a kid, I've just always been into it and loved the series and adopted the books, and just I take obsession to a new level with that when you research theories on something that's technically not real as far as all the muggles are concerned in the world. But yeah, it's really cool and it's relaxing. You know, I always listen to it when I'm warming up for events, and it kind of just gets me back to, you know, within myself, you know, feeling like a kid playing a game and, you know, just having fun.
Now, Chase, you came up through the First Tee program. What did that mean to you and how did that help you as you sort of forged ahead and looking for a career in professional golf?
It was awesome. You know, I got so many opportunities through the First Tee. I grew up with the First Tee of Greater Akron, and it's Ben Curtis, who is also a Kent State alum. You know, he hit the inaugural tee shot for the course that we were based out of. So also a little connection through Kent State that formed really well there. But the First Tee was fantastic. You know, being able to be out there and work on my game every single day, have fun, learn life lessons, learn, you know, important things that help me in school growing up to manage my time and be able to persevere through tough times and stuff. So it was a huge asset. And again, I got opportunities like to play. And at the time, it was the Nature Valley First Tee Open Champions Tour event at Pebble Beach, which I believe now it might be the Pure. I got to go to a leadership academy in Kansas at Colbert Hills and meet Jim Colbert. So I got a lot of good opportunities and learned from them and, you know, use everything I can to get myself to the next level.
So many amazing stories coming from the First Tee program. Chase, thank you so much for your time and congratulations again.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Right after the break, we'll have part two of our Golf Today roundtable. We'll say hello again to Ryan Lavner and Todd Lewis as we discuss Rory McIlroy's latest victory on the DP World Tour. Let's welcome back Ryan Lavner and Todd Lewis for the second half of our roundtable. Lav, I'm going to start with you this time. I'm sure you watched what happened with Rory. We talked about this on the podcast last week, the idea that the mistakes that we saw in his season opening event last week, also in Dubai, were maybe going to be an issue with him going forward. Clearly not an issue. What'd you make of his game?
Well, I think, Rex, this is exactly what you kind of wanted to see. It's a form of progression. It's development from what we saw week over week. The thing that struck me in Dubai was not necessarily the uncharacteristic mistakes that he made in the final round with the water ball with an iron, the three putt from 2 feet, and then obviously the roll poke into the water on the 72nd hole. It was kind of the nonchalant manner that Rory had afterward. And I was kind of struck by that, but afterward he said, this is an event with 60 pros and 60 amateurs. I know what I need to work on. And I think next week at the Dubai Desert Classic was obviously going to be better. And that's exactly what we saw. He was obviously tidier. He shot 63 in the third round. And then on the final day, Sunday, when it was so much trickier and you really had to be more precise with your iron shots, I think we saw a different side of Rory. And so, you know, I think back to what he said 2 weeks ago, where he kind of wants to play his way into major season this year, play 9 or 10 times before the Masters instead of his usual 6 or 7. I'm a big fan and a big proponent of that methodology. I think we were spoiled for so long with Tiger and trying to peak for the four majors that it's actually way harder to do in practice than it is to do in theory. And so I like the idea of Rory getting his game where he wants it this spring and then kind of going on autopilot and making just little tweaks here and there.
Todd, in good times and in bad times, interviewing Rory McIlroy is a joy because he's so thoughtful and giving with his time. Do you think that unburdened now from the role of PGA Tour governance, that at the age of 34, the sweet spot for so many players historically, that this could be and maybe should be and will be the year he adds major number 5?
You know, you make a great point. I think when he resigned from the PGA Tour Policy Board as a player director, I think that did take a weight off his shoulders. I mean, if you look back at 2023, I'm not saying he had a poor year, but I think that he wanted to have a better year on the golf course. And a lot of the reasons on the golf course, at least he felt from talking to him and people around him, was the fact that he was intertwined in all the negotiations between the PGA Tour and PIF. And obviously, he was a huge voice. Now, look, he's still talking. I mean, he's still giving his opinion on what the world stage should look like, but he is not in the mix, in the trenches of trying to make this deal happen. And I think that has taken a load off him mentally and emotionally. And he worked on his game during the offseason. And it should be no surprise that he comes out in 2024 and he plays well second and first in his first couple of starts. I think Rory he knows that his B game is better than probably most of the PGA Tour players' A game. He doesn't have to be perfect. And I think mentally and emotionally, this may be a reset year for Rory McIlroy because he's obviously got the mechanics and he's got the experience. I think he may be in a really good headspace heading into the PGA Tour season.
All right, Laff, he just said a reset year for Rory McIlroy. When we talk about him, it always comes back to it's been a decade since he won a major championship. Let's move ahead to the Masters and the rest of the year's major championships. How would you rate what we've seen so far, your expectations for him in the majors?
Well, we did this roundtable 2 weeks ago. I think you and I were even on this, and I was asked, what's your expectations for Rory for 2024? It's like what the expectations for Rory are every single year. He's probably going to win 2 or 3 times around the world, and he's going to contend in the major championships in almost every single one of them. That's exactly what he's done for the past 2 or 3 years, and I would expect no different. As we talked about, I do like him playing more ahead of the Masters. I do like the fact that he can just kind of maintain as opposed to trying to peak. But it's not a sexy answer, but he just kind of needs to keep doing what he's doing. The U.S. Open last year, where he lost by 1 to Wyndham Clark, was the perfect example. If he continues to do that, to put himself in the mix and not necessarily make the critical error, more times than not, he's going to stumble into a victory. I know there's a sense of urgency. I know he's in the prime of his career. I know he's now unburdened and doesn't have some of these obligations, and he can kind of return to the selfish Rory that we saw dominate when he was in his early 20s. But he's a different player now. He's a different person now. But I do believe that the process that he has undertaken with his game and with his mindset and the team that he's assembled around him, I do think he's primed for success. But then again, you only get 4 chances a year, and it's really hard to win them.
Yeah, I think this is going to be his 9th or 10th time where he's going to have an opportunity to win the career Grand Slam when he shows up at Augusta National. I think it's his 10th time, to be honest. It's interesting. If he continues to play like this, the way he's played his last 2 starts, and chalks off a couple of wins heading into Augusta National, then the intensity is going to be there on him, and then the external / internal pressure of him trying to complete that career Grand Slam and win the Masters is going to be even greater. And so it's going to be very challenging for him to come in under the radar if he continues to play like this. So I'm interested, again, to see where he is mentally and emotionally. He does have experience, and he's heard all the questions. He knows that he hasn't won a major championship in quite some time. And, you know, there are whispers that he is not quite living up to his ability, which I find to be just ludicrous. But I think he's going to I think he's going to win a major this year. I mean, that's just me. That's just my opinion. I definitely see him in the mix in two, three, maybe even all of them on the back nine come Sunday.
It's amazing what winning four majors in four seasons did in terms of maybe skewing all of our expectations for Rory McIlroy from 2011 to 2014. Great stuff from Todd Lewis and Ryan Lavner on this Monday. For Nick Dunlap, it's just the beginning. What a win it was for him yesterday as an amateur at the American Express. He thanked a lot of people, including his psychologist, Dr. Brett McCain, who's worked with a lot of tour pros. We'll bring Brett onto the program right after the break. And we're joined now by Dr. Brett McCabe, clinical and sports psychologist. It's great to see you, Doc. You help athletes and people perform under stress. Did you have any nerves watching your guy get it done yesterday?
Well, it was a unique day. I had two guys in that final group, and, you know, you're kind of mixed. You want both of them to play really well, and they did for the most part. And, you know, you want to watch them compete. And what you hope for coming down the stretch is that players learn to play under that pressure and compete, and we want them to have the romantic finish, but the reality is a lot of times it's a battle.
Doc, we spoke this morning and you made some really, really interesting points. What were some of the messages that you sent Nick last night before that final round?
Well, the thing about Nick was, you know, I told Nick Saturday night, I told him Friday, look, you've already won in the mind, right? Your life's not going to change of whether you win the Amex or not. It may be a little different. The colors may be different, but the reality is you've already won and you're not expected to play this well as an amateur, as a 20-year-old who's a US AM champ, a US junior amp. So let's go out there and play the game and use this as a learning opportunity to gain experience. You know, you're playing in an amazing group with two Ryder Cuppers and President's Cuppers and multiple winners on the PGA Tour and Justin Thomas and Sam Burns. Let's immerse ourselves in a great place. And let's learn to compete and compete where you want to be for the rest of your life. So instead of putting that pressure on, I have to win to validate this, I tried really hard to make this a learning opportunity for him to open up his mind so that he wasn't putting additional pressure. There was plenty of pressure. He didn't need any more.
Doc, there are stories of a young Magic Johnson dribbling a basketball through the neighborhood, lancing at all hours, waking up the neighbors. Folks would look through their window. There goes that crazy Irvin Johnson again. And there are also similar stories about Nick being on the golf course at all hours. You first met him at the age of 10. Is there something about young people that just love, it's not a job, it's joy, it's work, that you saw from him even at a young age?
I think you bring up a good point. Nick was like the stray dog at the clubhouse. We could never get rid of him. He was out there in the rain. He was out there first in the morning, last to leave. And he was always looking for a game. He didn't care who he played with. And at Greystone, we have an amazing number of tour players that he gets to play with. But the thing about what Nick was doing is he was playing to compete, to enjoy the competition. And a lot of times, I talk about it in one of my books, Break Free from Suckville, that many times the joy is what brings us to the game. And then we start layering in personal expectations and pressures, and it becomes more of a job, and then it becomes a burden. And so if I could encourage everybody who's in Nick's place is to go out there and enjoy the game and hit shots and crazy shots on the range and play versus trying to be in the right positions all the time. But Nick wanted to play. If there was a basketball court across the street, he would have played basketball. If there was an ice rink down the road and he lived in the north, he would have done that. He just loves competition and being in that competitive environment and learning from, I hate to say it, but older guys. He likes to be around that kind of competitive, those competitive juices and competing. And I think that prepared him extremely well with what we have at Greystone.
We spoke about it this morning. You work with so many young, talented players. And as you pointed out, they kind of show up with all the tools, at least from a mechanical standpoint. They can hit all the shots. The part that separates them is being mentally strong and being able to deal with that pressure. How do you coach players up? We see it time and time again now that young players leave college. They're immediately ready for the PGA Tour. How is that happening?
Well, college is really preparing kids for high-level competition. And what you have to remember, skills and talent's only the first step in the equation. My success equation is that we have skills and talent. We have to improve them and understand how to improve them based on what we're facing. But you have to understand how those skills and talents change under pressure. We're not assuming that we're always going to play our best. In fact, the circumstances are going to impact us. Changes the way we move, the way we think, the decisions we make, and how we deal with difficulty. The third level of that is we must be willing to be flexible mentally to adapt because nothing is going to go our way. For one of my tour players, we describe it as riding bulls. The harder you try to control the bull, the faster it's going to throw you. And then the last part of success is dealing with circumstance. So everybody focuses on good luck and bad luck and those skills and talents, and we're mesmerized walking the ranges. The reality is what makes great players great is when they have their C-minus game and they play themselves to a B-plus because of those middle two factors, dealing with pressure and knowing how to adapt and not measuring against some ideal every day. That's the death sentence for emerging golfers, is measuring against their best.
Doc, when Novak Djokovic was interviewed on 60 Minutes a few weeks back, he was asked by the interviewer, the interviewer said, your mental toughness is your greatest gift. And Novak corrected him and said, no, it's not a gift. I work at the mental part of the game. How much do athletes need to work on the mental part of the game, conscious breathing, as opposed to just being on the range endlessly or working on your serve in tennis, as it were?
That was a mental game gold, that Djokovic 60 Minutes. But one of the things that golfers do is they get stuck with trying to hit the ball better in a controlled environment on the range that doesn't have the demands that they need. And I want my players to mimic basketball players. They scrimmage all the time. They're playing pickup games all the time. And then they'll later work on their technique, but they're always competing. And the problem with golf is it's very, very difficult to simulate tournament pressure. But the problem is, if we're only working on technique, assuming it's going to transfer in the heat of the moment, our gap is way too large. And so I think what you have to do is use experiences as the greatest teacher we have, not seeing failure as a definition, but instead understanding that when there's a weakness or there's an area that we need to improve, how do we go back and reinforce our skill sets, our mindsets, instead of saying, oh, I failed, it's out of here, or everybody reacting negatively. Instead, looking at it as like, that's a lesson and that's gaining wisdom that is really hard to gain anywhere else.
We all watched Nick yesterday, and I wondered if he had a pulse. He looked like he was just so relaxed on the golf course. You know him much, much better than the rest of us. At what point during yesterday's round were you most impressed?
Well, I think after the double bogey on 7, I thought that was great. I think he managed some missed putts coming down that stretch very well, particularly on 15. I thought that was a pretty much of a gimme type of putt for him. But then he turns around and makes that one on 16, which was very difficult. Now, if we just drop the ball on a Wednesday practice round, that putt's not hard at all, but the circumstances changes things. I think the thing about Nick is what he said afterwards was, I was very nervous all day, and I felt it. And, you know, that's why you see those emotions of him crying afterwards. That vulnerability is really key, and it's so important for people to not try to be this master of the mental game, instead being the best student of the mental game. We can learn from our great athletes about what it takes, because the vast majority of them are not machines and robots. In fact, very few are. They experience emotions, but let's use those emotions. Let's not squash them. And so when I saw him progressing, now he had a great group too, of two good guys, right? And that helped. But really being in that environment of looking probably left and right and realizing I can do this, allowed those emotions to channel. We weren't going to calm down. He wasn't going to breathe himself out of that, trust me. But he had to immerse himself in it instead of feeling like he wasn't prepared for it.
Jeff Curl, who looped for him at the U.S. Amateur, a fine player in his own right, said that Nick has the game to be the number one player in the world at the age of 25. How do you think Nick will operate under those kinds of not necessarily expectations, but belief by some people that he can potentially be the best player in this game?
Well, I think the most important thing is who shows up today. That's what matters. We don't know what the future holds. We know that Nick is now a PGA Tour winner, and he wakes up this morning with decisions that he has to make. He has to try to figure out where he's going next, what he's doing. He has to respond different. Now, every time he goes on the road, people are going to want to talk to him, right? So he has to learn how to be more than just where his feet are, but how to be a pro at where he is. And that's the critical, because if it was a talent contest, no doubt about it. But the best and the best in the world know how to manage the environment around it. And I call it the circles. The inner circle is easy. That's us. It's the outer circles that impact us. So you go on the range and now you have people talking to you all the time and you can't get your work done. You have press conferences. You play in different groups and now people are watching. And now they expect you to be the US AM champ. They expect you to be a major champ. They expect you of all this. When in reality, you have to be the best version of yourself that day. What is done in the past is nothing more than a bookshelf. The experiences of today are defining what we do tomorrow. And our integrity is about how we treat the next moment. Our history and our rewards and our awards are based on our past. Those are done. What matters is how we show up today and how we treat the people around us and how we treat ourselves in the preparation of what we want to become.
Now, I'm going to be maximum outer circle here and come from a media perspective and ask kind of a personal question that I'm sure that Nick is going to come to you over the next few days and ask him what his next step should be. How would you advise him?
Well, I would tell him to talk to as many players that have been in this position before. And it's a unique position because of the signature events. And I think he loves the University of Alabama so much and his team and his coaching staff and that culture. So it's a really difficult decision for somebody at his age. I mean, I think we need to understand that. I think he needs to get a lot of really good advice. He doesn't have to hurry up and make a decision. Let's let the dust settle a little bit over the next 48 hours, 72 hours, talk to Coach Sewell, talk to the people around the program and see what's right for him. And I think everybody will support whatever decision he makes and understand that, you know, there's a lot of layers. He said in an interview, there are a lot of people that my decision impacts. That's what this kid understands, right? He understands the layers that are around him. And he'll make a really good decision, and whatever decision is, we'll support it.
Dr. McCabe, thank you so much for your time, and I hope he can stay in the moment for at least a couple of days and enjoy this for a while.
You got it. Roll Tide.
Still to come on Golf Today, he's no stranger to Torrey Pines, and he's no stranger to success on the PGA Tour. Charlie Hoffman will be making his 26th start at the Farmers Insurance Open this week, and he's joining the show in just a little bit. Stay with us. You won't want to miss that.
So great to have Charlie with us on this Monday. You're a big sports fan, a golf fan. What was your mindset watching Nick Dunlap, 20 years of age, wet behind the ears, getting PGA Tour win number one as an amateur?
You know what? The California Highway Patrol probably doesn't want to hear this, but I had my phone playing the golf driving down from Palm Springs yesterday. I was able to watch my daughter do some equestrian at Thermal, and then I drove down. I was hoping to get nine holes in the afternoon, but ran into some traffic and some weather. But you know what, watching it, listening to it on the way down, I mean, obviously friends with everybody else at the top of the leaderboard, but the story behind him is second to none, and I was obviously pulling for him. It was cool to watch.
Charlie, when you look at your record at Torrey Pines, I think you played there at the Farmers Insurance Open three times as an amateur. Can you put yourself in Nick's shoes and just imagine what he was going through on Sunday?
You know what? I played that event as a, geez, I want to say high school kid at 16 years old. And you know what? Getting there, playing with my idols, watching them play. I mean, it was unbelievable to be able to do that. And I remember warming up next to the range with Craig Stadler and Peter Jacobson. And I mean, I think you just said how many years I've played that event. I hadn't even computed that in my head. It's been a long time that I've played San Diego and different title sponsors, but what he was going through, it's a dream to be able to play on the PGA Tour. It's what the kids dreamed of doing is winning on the PGA Tour. I don't know if I'd say he probably didn't have the dream of being able to win last week, but obviously fulfilling that is what these kids are just so much better and more prepared than I think I was at a young age. And I think it's a lost I would say it's lost in the PGA Tour with exemptions giving them to young amateurs and making their dreams come true and seeing if they can compete against the best. I wish more tournaments would do that as they did in the Desert of the American Express, as the Farmers used to do with myself. And I think it's hopefully coming back to a trend to get these kids ready. Our pipeline in the PGA Tour is key, keeping these young kids interested in golf and wanting to play the PGA Tour is crucial for the longevity of the PGA Tour. So I hopefully this starts a trend of younger kids being able to get exemptions. I'm an older guy, and there's probably a lot of my counterparts that would completely disagree with this because we're trying to make a living. But without our younger generation playing, without them coming up and playing the PGA Tour, we don't have a PGA Tour. So I think they are just, they should be getting sponsor invites just like we are.
Charlie, my eyes aren't as good as they used to be, but I believe that's a Tony Gwynn jersey behind you, the late, great San Diego Padre. What's it like for you being at a home game this week, playing at Torrey Pines, not too far from where you grew up?
Yeah, I mean, obviously plans changed this morning. I was supposed to be at the golf course playing, but it's nice to be at home, getting the kids ready for school, doing some body work this morning. And I'm sort of in my gym workout room here and theater room, see a Gwynn jersey. There's some Tiger Woods stuff over there, and there's a lot of memorabilia in this room. But this is sort of my home away from home, just right next door to my house, and where I spend a lot of time getting ready for the PGA Tour on off weeks. And you know, it's nice to, when you get weather like this, to be at home. That's for sure.
26 start in this event. What does this event mean to you, and maybe more importantly, what does it mean to the community?
Yeah, you know what, the Century Club have done an amazing job throughout my career. The same organization's run it since the very start. Tom Wilson was a tournament director that used to give me all those sponsor invites, and I earned a few through some amateur qualifiers. But we've got a great new tournament director in Marty, and you know what, obviously, hopefully Farmers hangs in for a few more years. They've been a great sponsor and a great great to the community of San Diego and the Century Club. But you know what, this is the tournament I would love to win. It's the one I grew up watching as a kid, along with actually the tournament champions. People probably forget, it used to be down the road at La Casa, used to go to that one also. But there used to be two tournaments pretty close to each other that I loved to go watch as a kid. And I don't think I'd be here. I wouldn't be talking to you guys if those tournaments weren't in our community. And that's the outreach the PGA Tour has on younger generation. And just being able to watch them sit on the range and try to emulate what they did. And hopefully I'm doing that for a couple younger guys this week here at Torrey Pines. And you know what, it's amazing the influence you can have on a younger generation. And hopefully we're leading the path to where we have a great, strong tour in a bunch of years. And obviously would love to win this event. Probably, I mean, obviously everybody counts majors, but I think everybody wants to win their hometown event. And with nothing but great tournaments on the PGA Tour schedule, the West Coast gets a little jumbled for me because I love Palm Springs. I've won there when I was at Bob Hope, and now American Express, and Phoenix with one of my longtime sponsors of Waste Management. And then another one of my favorites up at Pebble. I mean, I tend to play a ton on the West Coast, and at my old age, I got to pick and choose, but this is definitely at the top of the list with the legendary U.S. Open golf course like Torrey Pines and the fans here in San Diego. I'd love to put on a good show for them.
Speaking of your age, 47 years young, you're in the home gym, the BOSU balls are behind you. How much are you already thinking about age 50 and kind of doing what Steve Stricker and Stuart Sink are doing, kind of dabbling between the PGA Tour and PGA Tour champions?
Yeah, the three rounds and not as much travel and not playing every week is obviously very intriguing. I still think I'm slightly dumb enough to think I can compete against these young guys, but I did play last week. I didn't play successfully to make the cut, but to see those numbers, those guys are shooting is, I mean, really unbelievable. I mean, obviously they hit it a long way, so they can chip and putt, and they have nerves of steel. So I think I still can compete with those guys, but my body's got to be good. That's why I'm in the gym. That's why I'm doing a ton of recovery. So a day like today on the day off isn't always a bad thing, especially on a golf course. I know I don't have to squeeze in a bunch of practice rounds this week, which is ideal. So I can focus on my body and be prepared. So I'm ready to compete against these young guys.
Charlie, if I can have you switch hats maybe a little bit into long-term player director on the policy board. You knew this question was coming. You stepped down after the end of last year. But Jordan Spieth, who is on the policy board, said last week that he thinks this year is a very critical year for the PGA Tour, in as much as the signature events are going to come into their own. I guess it's a two-part question. One, would you agree with that? And what would you envision, as someone who has sat through all of those meetings, the next 6 to 12 months will look like?
Well, if these walls in this gym could talk, it'd probably give you a little bit of insight. But you know what? Obviously, the signature events, I think, are going to be great. It's something we want to get our best players together more often and showcase our product at the highest level more on a regular basis, and hopefully not at the cost of the other events. But on paper, it all looks great. But you have to let it play out. We've done the FedEx Cup has been going along. Geez, for probably what, 16 years now, if I had to guess. And we tweak it all the time. And I wouldn't say we still don't maybe not have it right. So to say we're going to get the signature events right the first time around, it's not going to happen. We're going to probably change points. We'll probably change eligibility maybe a little bit, but who knows? But I think it is the pathway to a better product. I love being able to play your way in. I love the thought of the best players playing against each other more often. And I mean, now you got a great amateur eligible for all of them. I mean, I think we're hitting all buckets right now. It's great. I think the signature events are going to be something different for everybody, and hopefully just compete with the major championships. And so what everybody loves about the major championships is getting all those great players together more often. And I think we're going to try to do that more on a regular basis now.
Charlie, we appreciate your time and thoughts. Have a great workout, first of all, and have a great week at home as well.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, four-time winner on the PGA Tour. Still to come on Golf Today, Lydia Ko might not have had a great 2023, but she's already found the winner's circle this year. We'll talk to the now 20-time LPGA Tour winner right after the break. Welcome back to Golf Today as this Feel Good Monday continues. What a performance to start 2024. Lydia Ko entering the final hole with a three-shot lead, able to knock in a little bogey on the 72nd hole for a two-shot victory over Alexa Pano. With the win, Lydia joined an elite list of international players with at least 20 LPGA Tour wins. I mean, you want to talk about a who's who. I mean, like one-name stars, you know, Annika, Kari, I mean, Lorraine, I mean, we're talking about the best of the best.
There's a reason why the threshold on the PGA Tour for a lifetime exemption is 20 wins. Because I think even on the PGA Tour, certainly on the LPGA Tour, you understand how special that is. That's not just excellence, that's prolonged, impressive excellence.
And Lydia Ko making her way from Orlando to Bradenton. Congratulations on win number 20. And you're a passenger, I'm just letting the viewers know that you are not multitasking. Lydia, you said that you cried a lot in 2023. How did you get from those tears to hoisting that trophy yesterday?
First off, thanks for having me. You know, I think there was a point last year where I really wasn't sure if I was going to be back in the winner's circle. And I had a talk with my sister after Portland, and I was like, I've had a lot of ups and downs in my career, and I'm, to be honest, unsure if I'm ever going to go back up and win again. And to have been able to win at my home course was definitely something extra special.
You said last night that you didn't want to do this year what you did last year. You got off to a fast start last year. You won in Saudi Arabia, and I think your quote was, maybe you got a little bit too cocky. How do you keep that from happening this year?
It's nice to actually be able to play this week, you know, maybe feed off some good momentum from playing at Lake Nona. And it's a short drive from Orlando to Bradenton. So, yeah, you know, just work on the same things, you know, whether it's my swing and, you know, or my short game. And just be excited for this week. And there's still so much golf to be played in 2024. So just kind of keep going forward and see where that takes me.
Lydia, 20 wins. What a nice round number. What are you most proud of in your career so far?
I think when I won my first event in Canada when I was 15, I was just excited to be there to play alongside players I'd seen on TV or even in magazines. And, you know, here I am having won 20 events. I mean, I could have never imagined this day to have come. You know, there's been so many awesome moments, and, you know, even including the Olympics, which is obviously not part of the 20 wins, but it's just, I think every single one is hard to say, like, one highlights more than the other.
Now, you mentioned this last night as well. This moves you to within one point of getting into the LPGA Hall of Fame. List of accomplishments that you've done in your career, what would that mean to you?
That'd be pretty awesome. I feel like I'd be joining like the really cool kids club. but no, it's just, I think last year that was kind of the biggest thing on my mind, and I'm sure that's going to be on my mind this year as well. But, you know, just, I think last year was a huge learning curve for me, and to say, like, even if you do your 100%, sometimes the results aren't going to come and like show right away. So it's about the progress. And, you know, I think last week's result was it was a result of, you know, the tears and, you know, the lows and the highs. So I'm just going to take it on the same kind of mindset. And, you know, I feel like I'm moving in the right direction with my game, no matter, you know, the result. And I think that's always a good place to be.
Lydia, you've been around, you know, in the public eye for so long now, and you've got this incredible accomplishment with 20 victories. Was it hard being a child prodigy and having so much attention so young?
I don't think I ever thought of myself as a child prodigy. I feel like those are kind of labels that other people put on you, and you're like, I'm just any other player here, you know, doing what I love doing, and to have this kind of opportunity. I think, yeah, you know, those are things that you figure out on Google or when people like yourself ask. But no, it's just, I think there were at times where I was like, I feel like there's nothing extra special about me, and I wonder why they want to talk to me or why they want to get an autograph. But it's all kind of part of the process, and I'm very grateful for everything that's happened.
You mentioned the Olympics. You've already won a silver medal and a bronze medal. There's only one step to go from there. How much are you looking forward to later this year in Paris?
Yeah, I'm super excited. I think coming into the 24 season, Paris Olympics is probably the biggest star, you know, in my calendar. To have been able to represent New Zealand in both Rio and Tokyo was awesome. And, you know, Olympics was something that, whether it was the Winter Olympics or just the Summer Olympic Games, was something that I'd seen on TV and seen other people and other Olympians go on the podium. And when golf was returned in over 100 years back in Rio, I wanted to make sure I was there. And even though I've yet to listen to my national anthem, you know, as I haven't won gold yet, it's such an unreal feeling to be there up on the podium and just playing that event. It's kind of no other event really equals that.
Lydia, I want to read a couple of quotes from your peers after you won for the 20th time on the LPGA. Alexa Pano saying that Lydia is one of the nicest people I've ever met. Brooke Henderson saying, I've always looked up to Lydia. What does it mean to you to hear that kind of praise from the people that are trying to beat you every week?
I mean, it's very sweet of them. I feel lucky that I get to play alongside the best female golfers week in, week out. You know, I was lucky enough to play with Alexa and Allie on the final round, and Allie actually earlier in the week, and also Brooke the second day as well. And, you know, yes, we are competing against each other, and yes, we want to be the one that's hoisting the trophy at the end of Sunday, but, you know, I think the difference on our tour is that everybody genuinely is supportive of each other. If, you know, when Alexa made that great putt on 16 and then another birdie on 17, I was excited for her as well. And, you know, I think the players are very genuine, and I'm just lucky that I'm not only playing alongside the best female golfers in the talent side of point, but, you know, just great people.
Well, we really appreciate you taking the time. And again, congratulations on number 20. What a special number.
Thank you so much.
It's still hard to believe, but Nick Dunlap notched the ninth win by an amateur on the PGA Tour since 1940. After the break, we'll be joined by Steve Burkowski. He was on the 18th green at the stadium course when history was made last night at PGA West.
Steve Burkowski was there at the Coachella Valley, is now in San Diego for the Farmers. Burko, just what was the energy like on the ground when Nick got the job done?
Well, Damon, it was as good as I can remember in a quarter of a century covering this game for Golf Channel. The buildup, the anticipation, how would the kid, the 20-year-old Nick Dunlap, play in that final round paired alongside Sam Burns and Justin Thomas? And I think after that tee shot on 7, many would have thought, okay, it was a good run, but he bounced back at 8 with a birdie. Then overlooked par save at 9, but an 8 to 10 footer to keep it going in the back 9, and for the most part played steady, strong golf coming through. And you know, when it got to that green and you realized that Sam Burns had given away his chance to win, Bazadenhout making the birdie on 18, as Nick told me after on the broadcast, he didn't know he had a one shot lead. He thought it was 2, but to have the nerves to get up there and hit it to about 5 feet 9 inches and see that putt, as Rex said, that we have shown over and over again, you get the sense with the energy and then the drive here to San Diego last night of realizing we were all part in some small way of seeing something very historical.
Now, Burko, as you said, you were there last night, and Damon and I spent the last 2 days asking anyone we knew if we saw this coming in Nick Dunlap. You actually went back to last year's Walker Cup that was at St. Andrews. You had a moment with the young man. What did you learn about him?
I did, Rex. I go back to what Jay Sewell, the Alabama men's golf coach, has shared with us, that Nick has that want to, the special attribute that so few have of doing the things behind the scenes when no one's looking to achieve great things. So let's go back to that aforementioned Walker Cup, the Americans rallying Sunday at St. Andrews to get the job done. I caught up with some friends, had some dinner a few hours later, was walking back to the hotel, and I see the American team celebrating at Roussac's down in the basement, and I continue a little bit down the road to where I was staying, and lo and behold, Nick Dunlap is walking to me. And I said, that was a heck of a day, a lot of fun, thanks for everything. Where are you going? He said, I'm going to hang out with the team and celebrate a little bit. I said, well, where have you been for the last couple hours? He said, I was in my room studying, getting ready for exams. I've already missed a lot of school because of the U.S. Amateur, so he didn't want to fall behind. So I really think that speaks to who he is, and then a 19-year-old realizing I was part of a really special moment with the U.S. Walker Cup team, but I've got some academics to worry about, a well-rounded, cerebral young man. And as he was asked yesterday, yeah, he had homework, but he wasn't quite worried about it. I think, again, it exemplifies what J.C. Wells said. Nick Dunlap does the things that few people see in order to be great.
Wow. Speaking of then 19-year-olds, I believe, Berkley, you were on site in 2013 at the John Deere when Jordan Spieth won for the first time on the PGA Tour. Any comp there?
Good memory, Damon. It's funny how the stars have aligned for me to see that. And I've always been a big believer of Jordan Spieth is the best teenager I have ever seen play golf. I'm not that old that I saw Tiger Woods during his day when he toured up in the early to mid-90s. Jordan Spieth had that intangible, that it factor. I was able to be at both of his junior amateur victories, as I was with Nick Dunlap on the call in 2021. I think you can draw the comparison, that it factor, that variable. Call it what you want, that special something that even though there are a handful of great, young, talented golfers, I think the separation is from the things you don't see. And I think on the drive here to San Diego, I said, you know what? I can now maybe put this Nick Dunlap victory right up there with Jordan Spieth, what he did in the Quad Cities 11 years ago. I think you can potentially see some parallels moving forward because Nick Dunlap certainly has that it factor.
Steve, you cover the college game so closely. What do you make of the evolution of young college players coming out and being tour ready, essentially, when they show up on tour, even if they're just making their third or fourth start?
Yeah, it really speaks to what college golf has become, Rex, in the last 10, 15, 20 years. And I think it goes back about 11, 12 years ago when Jordan Spieth turned professional and then Justin Thomas. And then there was a little bit of a lull. I'd always get the question, who is the next one? I think it is cyclical. And then what did we see a few years later? John Rahm, the impact he had immediately in professional golf. Take a couple of years off, and then you get Hovland, Morikawa, Wolf, Justin Suh. I think we see it more often than not of amateurs being ready, being successful. And I don't want to jump the gun. You guys have documented. It was 33 years since an amateur last won on the PGA Tour, 8 or 9 in the last 84 years. I don't think you're going to come out and see amateurs winning yearly on the PGA Tour, not because they're not capable. They certainly are very good, but is that special one that can get the job done? And I want to circle back to a conversation I had with Pat McCabe, the executive director of the American Express, yesterday. Consider the fact that Pro-Am component has been a fixture of that tournament for 65 years, but Nick Dunlap was just the third amateur to ever play with the professionals in the American Express, all those invitations coming over the last 7 or 8 years. And he said it is a change of philosophy in terms of who those sponsor invites go to. It's an evolution of thinking. I think people like Pat McCabe and other tournament directors might think differently. Remember what Claire Peterson did for so long at the John Deere Classic, trying to identify the next talented player that wouldn't only serve them well this year, but potentially for years down the road at their tournament. I think all that would stem, Rex, from people thinking differently of saying, you know what, it's worth it to give Nick Dunlap or Gordon Sargeant or Michael Thorbjornsson a spot on the PGA Tour because they have certainly proven they have been up to the challenge when given that opportunity.
Well, I imagine there'll be a lot of young golfers wondering what Burkowski's schedule is. You know, they're going to try to pull off a Jordan Spieth 2013 or a Nick Dunlap in 2024. Thanks for the time. Enjoy the week in San Diego, Burko. We have Beth Ann Nichols of Golf Week Magazine joining us now. You wrote a great piece on Lydia's 20th win on the LPGA Tour. We just spoke to her. I was struck by the tears she admitted she had last year to the triumph that she had yesterday.
You know, I love the vulnerability that she's showing us. I thought yesterday when she was talking about staying in the Staybridge Suites in Arkansas, crying on the phone to her husband about the fact that she couldn't string two rounds together, made her so relatable to a lot of players. That here's was this extraordinary phenom who had such a torrid start to her LPGA career and then has had so many peaks and valleys since. So it's just wonderful to have another Lydia Ko come back. And in addition to obviously having the new instruction from Siwoo Lee, it just feels like she's done a lot of soul searching into, you know, kind of what causes those ups and downs and how can she keep it from happening again.
We just heard Damon go through the Hall of Fame criteria. She is 1 point shy, which is amazing when you think of what Lydia has accomplished in her career. Beth Ann, is that standard too high to get into the LPGA Hall of Fame?
It's interesting because I asked Brooke Henderson that question yesterday, and she said, absolutely. You know, when you look at the competitive landscape today and how deep the tour is, you know, asking a player to get to 27 points seems like such a tall task when we haven't seen a player weigh in since NB Park in 2016, which is a long time ago. But then I asked Annika Sorenstam a little later in the day, and she's like, absolutely not. 27 is fine. Doesn't need to be changed. You know, and it's an interesting debate because you're going to see players. We already have Meg Mallon and Laura Davies in the World Golf Hall of Fame who aren't in the LPGA Hall of Fame. And that trend is probably going to continue. I would imagine a Christy Kerr would wind up there one day, a Dottie Pepper, and they won't be in the LPGA Hall of Fame. So, you know, the question is the LPGA Hall just that sacred and extraordinary, or will it become obsolete?
Great water cooler discussion. How about the runner-up finisher, 19 years old, Alexa Pano? Is she built to last? She seems to have that it factor as well.
You know, it's interesting because I had a conversation with Stacey Lewis going into the TOC about the Solheim Cup, and she did not mention Alexa Pano. Allison Lee was the player on her radar, but I'm sure that radar is now expanded to include Alexa after such a strong showing at the Tournament of Champions. She was having a blast playing along the celebrities. I talked to her dad, Rick Pano, who's been her caddy forever, about what he saw. What was the difference maker? You know, because last year, in addition to winning, she also missed 9 cuts. So she was still ranked well outside the top 100 in the Rolex rankings going into the week, just didn't have that consistency. And he said it was a change in her putting. She made a small adjustment to ball position, and she also changed to a mallet putter, and that gave her a lot of confidence because the putter was wreaking havoc for the first half of the year last year. So she's got that figured out.
Some news coming from the tournament. Hilton Grand Vacations announced a 5-year extension to host the Orlando area event. What's your reaction to that, and what does it mean for the LPGA Tour?
Well, I think this celebrity combination with the LPGA is a great hit for the tour. I think it does bring in fresh eyeballs, and I think the fact that it's not only a 5-year commitment from a brand that everyone knows around the world in Hilton, but it's also a commitment to raise the purse considerably over the next 5 years to $2.5 million, which I think is really important in terms of drawing a quality field with such an awkward place on the schedule.
Well, listen, you know, opening day in baseball, the first week of the NFL season, you want the best players, you know, to kind of kick off the year. We saw some big-time players skip this event. No Jin Young Ko, for example. No Minji Lee, for example. Any concerns from the tour that they're missing some of the great players to start the season?
Well, I think, of course, it has to be concerning, you know, especially, you know, when you consider the fact that they did add a second event. Now it's not just on an island like it was by itself last year. You have an event in Bradenton this week to give a little two-tournament swing. But I also understand from a player's perspective, especially if you live all the way in Australia or Asia, that there's a mini off-season after this. There's several weeks off after the Bradenton event. And for those players, especially a Jin Young Ko, who was nursing an injury at the end of last year, having that extra time off to then just start your season in Asia, a much easier commute, just makes a lot of sense. So, you know, no matter what they do, it's still really a tough sell when you look at how the schedule, you know, sets up for the year.
Beth Ann, you've covered Lydia her entire career, and you talked about in your story last night on GolfWeek.com sort of the tears of last year. How has she matured, and how is she different as a player now versus when you first started covering her as a pro?
Miles. I mean, look, everything was easy when Lydia first came out on tour. You know, she's such a field player, a natural talent, seemingly had never struggled before in her life. You know, she was already talking about the fact that she would probably retire by the age of 30. She had it all mapped out, you know, but then life happened. And there are the inevitable valleys that come for every athlete. And, you know, now she's in such a great place personally, you know, married to the love of her life. And I'm sure that's also a balancing act too, having to be away from her husband while still chasing these goals that she has. So, you know, we're seeing a very introspective Lydia. I love her long, in-depth answers now. I feel like she's always given us long answers, but I feel like they're so much more revealing now in terms of how she's feeling and what she's learning. And I love that because I think it's so helpful to a lot of players who are coming up after her, especially like an Alexa Pano, who had so much early success and how to deal with the weight of expectation. And one little caveat for the Hall of Fame, they did actually change the criteria now where if you were to win the gold medal, you also receive a Hall of Fame point. Oh. So that would be an amazing way for Lydia to play her way in because she has, of course, the other medals, the silver and the bronze. So to get the sweep with the gold and play her way into the Hall of Fame would be extraordinary.
Beth Ann, making people smarter. Thank you, Beth Ann.